I'll just start by reminding you all that the lectionary, you know, the cycle of readings that we do, the Revised Common Lectionary, has been around for decades and decades. And the readings we have for today, therefore, were chosen for the 11th Sunday after Pentecost in lectionary year A, because it's a 3-year cycle, chosen years and years and years ago. I only say that because some of us, upon looking at these lessons and hearing them today, might think that they had been chosen specifically to address the news of the last week or so in the life of our nation. Each of these readings speaks pretty directly toward the current state of affairs, toward the current public concern that everybody's worried about here in this country. In our first lesson, of course, in Isaiah, God promises welcome and mercy to people of every background, nationality, and language in the world. The foreigners will be welcomed into God's house, a house of prayer for all peoples, a house for outcasts from everywhere. It sounds to me pretty on the nose in terms of rejecting white supremacy, which has been kind of the theme of the week, that God's grace and love are for people beyond beyond the powerful in our nation. Could even be the psalm, a psalm of praise to the God of all nations, who judges the peoples with equity and guides all nations, not just a chosen few. It says, "Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you judge the peoples with equity and guide all the nations on earth, not just the one special nation or the couple of special nations, but all the nations on earth in all their blessed diversity." Again, not a lot of room for white supremacy there. Or it could be our second reading from Romans, in which Paul concludes a long and dense argument by saying that God would never, that God could never reject God's promises to Israel. Paul writes, "God has not rejected his people, whom he foreknew, for the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable." The central human experience of God is that God keeps God's promises. And certainly God keeps God's promises to the people of Israel. I wouldn't normally have to say that, except that Nazis are a thing again. You know, I record the audio of these sermons and I post them on my blog. I'm going to have a hashtag just for Nazis. Like, how stupid, how ridiculous. If you'd have told me 10 years ago when I got out of school, like, oh yeah, someday you'll have to preach about Nazis so much you'll have to make it a hashtag, I would say, what's a hashtag? Because that didn't exist 10 years ago. But when that's an actual thing going on in our nation, then it's something that we have to talk about. And Paul refutes that as directly and thoroughly as any place in the Bible right here. There's no place for anti-Semitism. And we have to say that, of course, because Christian anti-Semitism has been a stain on the church for centuries and centuries, and on the Lutheran church in particular. And so we have to be clear that there's no room for anti-Semitism, that it is anti-biblical, anti-Christian, and anti-Jesus. And again, all this is just in the lectionary, happened to come up for the week. All of the resources that I use online that sort of show you, they look ahead and say, well, this is what the lectionary says, and this is how you could preach about it. All of them that I saw this week, their eyes sort of lit up, and they said, well, that's pretty straightforward, because you can just talk about what the Bible says, about what's going on in the world, like, easiest preaching Sunday you've had in a while, is more or less what they say. And then, as if that wasn't enough, we've got our gospel story today, quite possibly the best of our readings, quite possibly the most helpful, as we try to figure out how to follow Jesus in today's complicated world and to address the challenges that bombard us from the news and from Twitter, Facebook, and wherever else you get your news from. First, Jesus preaches to a crowd about purity. He preaches that avoiding contact with impure things or people is not what makes us righteous, contrary to popular opinion. Eating unclean or impure foods is not nearly as bad for us, Jesus says, as are the selfish, hateful, fear-based things we say and do to one another. A surprisingly common understanding of what it means to follow Jesus still goes like this. It goes, I'm a good person because I avoid bad things and bad people. Avoiding bad things and bad people does not make you a good person. Or at least it doesn't matter in the scheme of what Jesus means when he means to follow him. Notice that Jesus' list of sins here is about how we treat one another. He says, for out of the heart come evil intentions, murder, adultery, fornication, theft, false witness, slander. These are what defile a person. These are what make a person unclean. These are the sins that matter, the sins that separate us from God. So often, sin is what we do to each other, how we betray those who love us, how we take what we can from those weaker than us, how we deny the full humanity of people who are different than us. When we hurt people, we separate ourselves from God more than any ritual action or inaction could do. So Jesus makes this speech. He explains it to his disciples, who of course don't get it, being very much in character. And then immediately Jesus is faced with an opportunity to put his money where his mouth is. This is not a phrase I would normally use for Jesus, but here we are. A Canaanite woman, a foreigner, not a Jewish person, a Gentile, someone outside, entirely outside the whole believing in God thing. She comes to Jesus and pleads with him to heal her daughter, who is tormented by a demon. Have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon. And Jesus ignores her. Now, by law, Jesus should ignore her. He should not speak with this woman. It would break cultural and gender taboos. He's not supposed to talk to her. She's not supposed to talk to him. The rules state this quite clearly. And if Jesus does come in contact with this woman, he would certainly be labeled unclean, impure. He would be defiled by even coming into contact with her. Those are the rules. They sound a lot like the rules he had just preached against, actually. But Jesus seems not to immediately make the connection. Jesus' disciples, of course, try to get rid of the woman because she's annoying. So that's good job, guys. Keep up the poor work. Jesus then explains that his mission is only for God's chosen people, for Israel, not for foreigners, not just for everybody. Who's got the time to save everybody? The Canaanite woman kneels before Jesus, begging, and he basically calls her a dog, along with all of her people, which is exactly as rude then as it is today. You don't go around calling people dogs. Yet Jesus does it. I'm just gonna say it. Okay. Because the most obvious phrase, again, because, you know, relating the scriptures to the popular culture of the day. So I'll just use the obvious phrase. Nevertheless, she persisted. Yes, Lord, she says, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. And Jesus changes his mind and heals her daughter because this woman's faith is so strong. Our bishop, Craig Satterley, is one who posts weekly videos about the gospel lessons, looking forward to help preachers out and to tell some news about the synod. This week I watched his video, and he said that Jesus, after making this beautiful speech about how we should treat others, runs smack dab into his own prejudices when confronted by this Canaanite woman. She's a foreigner, she's a woman, she's loud, she's causing a scene, she's blocking the road, she's protesting that Jesus could use his power to save her daughter's life. Jesus had said the right thing, but then struggles to actually do the right thing because of the prejudices embedded in him by his culture, because of his own experiences of thinking Canaanite women are not to be dealt with, by his own understanding of, well, I need to focus on what's important for me, on my mission, and let those other people go. Man, if that can happen even to Jesus, then you bet it can happen to you and I. It's a pretty amazing story, isn't it? Jesus expressing the same prejudices that others have. Now, he wasn't as thick as his disciples by any means, but it took him a minute to come around to do the Jesus thing, the thing we recognize. None of this is to say that Jesus is the bad guy here, but he does have to make a choice. He has to make a choice about what faithfulness to God looks like. Does it look like following the law? Does it look like focusing on the core group that he came to serve? Or does it look like being uncomfortable? Does it look like breaking the rules? Does it look like expanding God's reign of mercy, even to the most unexpected people? That's the choice Jesus has to make in this story. It's a choice we all make just about every day in our lives. When does our faithfulness to God look like following the rules and caring for our own? When does faithfulness to God look like throwing out the plan and caring for all those who need God's love the most, no matter what it costs us? When these two things seem to be in conflict, how do we decide? It's not easy. Even Jesus changes his mind. It's not easy. Now, there's a lot of grace in this story today. There is grace, of course, for the girl who had suffered the torment of a demon and who is made whole again. There is grace for the woman who persisted, who earned praise from Jesus and wholeness for her daughter. There is grace for the disciples who prioritized their own comfort over a little girl's suffering, but still they learned a powerful lesson about how far God's love extends. And there is grace for you and I. Because when we follow Jesus, when we try to do the right thing, we will mess up. We will not be as quick as Jesus to change our minds. As our hymn that we're going to sing after this says it, we will make God's love too narrow with false limits of our own. We will fail to embody the love of God in Jesus. We will ignore the words of Jesus because it is inconvenient or because it makes us uncomfortable or because we don't think those people really deserve to receive God's mercy. We will inadvertently perpetuate racism and prejudice, and we will be taken aback when someone calls us out on it, just like Jesus was. To make a long story longer, what I could have just said, we will sin. We will sin. And God will forgive us. God will give us another chance to do better. That's why Jesus showed up in the first place. That's why Jesus went through all this. That's why Jesus put up with people yelling at him in the streets. That's why Jesus healed those who needed healing. To show us that God will forgive us. Notice, of course, that when Jesus changes his mind, he changes it in the direction of mercy. Always. Just like God has always done. In our first lesson today, God expanded the definition of God's people to include outcasts from every nation, everyone who trusts God and needs God's welcome. Paul writes to the Romans that both Jews and Gentiles must receive God's promise of grace. God's mercy continually eclipses our sin. I don't think I can make this point any more clearly than will the song we're about to sing. It's one of my very, very favorites in all the world, and certainly of the hymns. There's a wideness in God's mercy. The words express God's mercy as clearly as any words can. And the tune is so beautiful. It's like it was written just to share the grace of God in these words. It's a little hard to sing, but bear with us. You'll figure it out. It's a good one. Receive God's mercy. It is for you. Share that mercy with those who need it most. In this room, in your own lives, on the streets of our nations. in times of unrest. Share God's mercy, because mercy is what God has given you. Amen.